Victoria Woodhull, spiritualist, suffragist, free lover, and in her time, the most famous woman in the United States. In 1872, she ran for president. By the time of her death, she'd been nearly erased from history. Until now. Welcome to UMO Ensemble's Vic, the life and times of Victoria C. Woodhull, future presidentess. Episode 6, Mrs. Satan.
Oh, what a world!
Mama? Shh. Sleep. I know you're tired. I'm not you, Mama. I don't hear voices, and I can't see the future, except for mine. Anyone can see that. When I die, this is what they will write. Zulu Maud Woodhull. Daughter of Victoria Woodhull. I gave you everything, Mama. He loved me, and I loved him.
Rumor mongering. Still they starve. Corrupt.
Mama?
Gospel of love. Jezebel.
Jezebel?
What? Zulu.
Yes.
You came back?
Yes.
No one else ever came back.
I know.
I love you, Zulu.
Yes, Mama.
The Woodhull and Claflin Weekly, while still stumping for suffrage, is making heads spin with an about-face in the realms of finance. The darlings of Wall Street have taken a surprising shine to the principles espoused by Mr. Karl Marx, even going so far as to publish his entire manifesto. What a careen from the crystal chandeliers of Vanderbilt's largesse to the hovels of the laboring hordes. This lucky reporter managed to meet the ladies themselves outside Delmonico's and was able to pose a question or two, and some shocking revelations came to light.
Vicky, that nice reporter, Johnny Green, is right outside.
No, not tonight.
We need somebody on our side.
We have somebody on our...
Somebody from a paper other than ours. Now be nice.
Miss Woodhull, Miss Claflin.
Tennessee, please. Good evening to you.
Miss Tennessee, if I could pose a quick question or two?
No.
Vicky, please excuse my sister, sir.
We will not comment on rumor mongering.
Of course not.
What would you like to ask?
Well, your views have shifted rather dramatically towards the cause of labor, ma'am. A fascinating move from Wall Street fortune makers.
We do not object to the accumulation of wealth. However, we spend every dollar we accumulate to fight on behalf of the voiceless and powerless.
Every dollar?
What we really object to is a certain few holding all the wealth. Wealth built on the backs of the poor laborers, sir. Those men down in the coal mines and seamstresses just a few blocks away from here, they are forced to work over 14 hours a day.
And still they starve. But someone like Mr. Astor watches properties bequeathed him by his father. Properties he did not lift a finger to earn, add more to his wealth year after year. And everyone bows before him as if he were a king, seeking to curry favor that he may deign to donate to their cause.
But do you not count one of our country's wealthiest individuals as a dear friend?
We do not.
Commodore Vanderbilt advised us and gave us a bit of seed money for
How
our...
How is it right that if a poor hungry child steals a loaf of bread, he gets hauled off to the tombs? When somebody like the Comm can make $1 million in a day off a secret tip and other poor saps not in the know lose their shirt?
A secret tip? From
we are
where?
Done, sir. Thank you and good evening.
But ladies...
You're home. Good.
Vicky, I got mad. I couldn't help it.
Don't worry.
What happened?
Tenney burned a bridge... It was beautiful.
What bridge?
Vanderbilt.
Oh.
We don't need him.
Well, he was...
What?
Covering the rent on the brokerage.
Still?
And the house. I'll set up more lectures and we can move.
No.
But
no, we must not seem to be...
shaken?
Weak.
Right. We've never been that.
Then what?
Hush! I have to... They think I am corrupt, licentious. A new champion. I need a champion. Someone no one can sneer at. Someone untouchable. Reverend Beecher.
Huh?
Listen. If Beecher stands with me, no one will dare challenge us. Our plans, my character, and it makes sense. His gospel of love, why wouldn't
Victoria.
He want it? Your trial, Vanderbilt, our background, it will all mean nothing. Beecher's supporters will embrace
Vicky,
me.
You're not making
listen!
Sense.
Listen! Donations will come pouring
Victoria.
In.
Why would Beecher even talk to you?
Because Mr. Tilton will entreat him on my behalf.
Theodore Tilton?
He's Beecher's confidant.
Uh-huh.
I didn't realize you'd met.
We haven't yet. Don't look at me like that. I am saving this.
Oh, what a world.
Madam, I must ask. Your commitment to the principles of communism.
Marx. We published his manifesto, and he turned around and stabbed us.
Equality for women? Nein! Trade unions take precedence. These women splinter our focus and threaten our cause.
Capitalist, communist, they are all the same.
Indeed. You later eschewed Herr Marx's philosophies rather strongly.
And if I did? It was a grand experiment. And it brought me to Theo.
Theodore Tilton. Poet, journalist, and the most popular young man in America.
He was beautiful.
Yes, tall, elegant, with auburn hair curling about his collar.
He was beautiful inside.
Indeed. You marched with him to honor the fallen communards of Paris.
A funeral parade. Thousands of us marching. The world was about to change. Or so we thought.
Followed by an intimate dinner, as his wife, the young Elizabeth, or Libby Tilton, dines with Reverend Beecher, enjoying a bachelor existence while his wife partakes of the country air.
Mrs. Woodhull, I was most grateful for your invitation to dine. I am not ready to bid farewell to the day.
It was extraordinary, the power, the electricity in the air. I can feel it crackling about me still.
I suspect electricity always crackles about you. You are the most alluring and controversial women's rights advocate in America.
You have been reading my press.
One cannot avoid that, not that I would wish to.
I am honored to be followed by America's dashing, fearless poet knight-errant of reform.
I am afraid I feel neither dashing nor fearless of late, Mrs. Woodhull.
And I not very alluring, although controversy is my constant companion.
Mrs. Woodhull...
We are certainly on a first-name basis by now, are we not? Theodore?
Theo, please. Victoria?
It's blissful to share the company of a kindred spirit tonight.
I was surprised to hear you were not dining with your husband.
Which husband?
You need fear no judgment from me.
I know. If only others were as sympathetic.
They don't know you as I do, Victoria.
Mrs. Tilton did not accompany you at the march today.
She does not care for such events or such ideals.
She seems a quiet little thing. Where is she this evening?
Dining with a friend, I believe.
What an infuriating day, Libby.
It was so loud, Henry.
The streets were positively clogged by the rabble, bleeding about fallen martyrs and spewing ridiculous fantasy. An 8-hour workday? Legislatively insured, no less? What can they be thinking?
Theo marched. With that Woodhull woman.
Libby, darling girl, don't be troubled.
He supports the socialists.
I beg your forgiveness for bringing ugly political talk into our precious time together.
She's giving a really big speech. at Steinway Hall.
Yes, I know. And the truth shall make you free, or some such nonsense. She wanted me to introduce her, can you imagine?
What?
Oh, yes. She has sent more than one letter my way. Ink-stained, inelegant missive.
How can she imagine you'd even consider...
According to her, we both preach sermons of love. She feels my presence on the stage beside her would bear witness to the likeness of our messages.
The likeness.
She clearly wants to quiet the tongues of those she claims are tearing her down, wrongly, according to her. The drowning do become desperate.
So, you won't be introducing her.
I am not a fool, Libby.
Like Theo.
Oh, let us not think of him, my sweet. We have but one more night before I am no longer alone.
Henry, what if he leaves me for her?
Your husband may be a fool, but no man is that foolish, dear girl.
But what shall become of me if he does?
Well, I'll take care of you, my dear.
But how?
She's dining with a friend. The Reverend Beecher, perhaps?
What?
They seem close.
You needn't be kind. I am well aware of the rumors about them.
Yes.
It's disgraceful.
One cannot control how feelings shift and change, Theo. Although I find her preference for an old nag over a thoroughbred baffling.
You're very kind. Power is seductive.
He does have the ear of the nation.
As well he knows.
You sound bitter.
Let us not speak of them. I would much prefer one of our enchanting conversations.
I am torn, Theo.
Victoria.
Weariness weighs on my soul. Being so relentlessly judged, I sometimes feel...
The world doesn't know you as I do.
I'm afraid they may never. Some days, I don't even wish to rise.
My dear Victoria, you shall always rise, and if ever I can aid you, you have but to ask. I am your servant.
Oh, Theo, thank you. I need support.
You shall always have mine.
I need Reverend Beecher's.
Beecher?
I need an advocate of his stature, and it is unconscionable, is it not, that I am tarred and feathered for views I hold openly while he commits his sins in secret.
Of course, but...
If he would only stand with me, people would listen. They would understand.
Victoria, I cannot approach him.
If he would only say yes. Mrs. Woodhull's beliefs may be unconventional, but she holds love in the highest degree of honor, and as such, we are more akin than not. Only that, and no one would dare castigate me.
I understand. I simply cannot speak to him. My wife, she...
What?
She miscarried a child last year.
Theo?
It was most likely Beecher's...
I'm so sorry, Theo. Forgive me, I didn't know.
You couldn't have.
Come. Come, let us leave heartache behind. Your beautiful soul deserves realms of joy. The stars are breathtaking from the rooftop garden. Who knows what dreams await us?
You are the most extraordinary woman I have ever met.
Victoria Claflin Woodhull, you look like the cat who got the cream.
Sister!
Was that the angelic Mr. Tilton I saw creeping down from the roof garden earlier?
Theo, he's extraordinary, Tenny. I haven't slept.
I hope James didn't hear.
We talked all night long.
Oh, of course you did.
We did! About literature and poetry, and I got it, Tenny. I got Beecher.
Do tell. Good morning, James.
Tenny,
Victoria, you didn't come to bed last night.
I was talking to Theo.
You mean Mr. Tilton?
Yes, and we have him, finally.
Really?
Listen, I mean Beecher, the Reverend Ugly Beecher. He must introduce me now at Steinway. He has to. I know about
him. Most people already know about him and Tilton's wife.
Not just that. He's a hypocrite, far more than anyone knows. He must stand with me now, and it will silence all of them, everyone trying to tear us apart. I know it.
November 20, 1871. A New York night so wet and disagreeable that the city's usually bustling streets are virtually empty. Until we come to Steinway Hall. Over 3,000 individuals have gathered to hear the most famous orator in many an age attempt to silence the voices who slander, abuse, and vilify her. New Yorkers from all quarters, including one or two famed faces, are waiting to hear Mrs. Woodhull share her thoughts on the principles of social freedom. One conspicuously absent is the most reverend Henry Ward Beecher, who is expected to introduce the lady this evening.
Where is he, Theo?
I don't know.
We spoke after I wrote him.
Beecher's a coward, Vicky.
How could he?
We knew that he was
I can't stand up there alone.
You're not alone.
You're never alone, Victoria.
You're not alone, Mama.
Victoria, it's time. Oh, Tilton.
Blood?
They're restless, Victoria.
I can't.
You don't need to.
Vicky, breathe.
I can't.
I will introduce you.
How lucky.
James, stop. Theo, go. Vicky, breathe.
Ladies and gentlemen, I came here tonight to listen to one of the greatest minds of our time share her thoughts on the deep social dilemmas facing our nation. While many lauded gentlemen were invited to introduce her this evening, all declined, citing objections to the lady's character. She was preparing to come upon this stage unattended and alone. I say proudly that I know her, and I vouch for her. Some may say she is a fanatic. Many will say I am a fool. But free speech is a right shared by all, fanatics and fools alike. It is my honor and privilege to introduce you to a woman who has awakened hearts and minds across the country, mine included. Ladies and gentlemen, Victoria C. Woodhull.
My brothers and sisters, my private life has been pictured by the press to be that of a very bad woman. This is not the truth. Tonight, I am here to say simply, law cannot regulate love. To love is a right higher than constitutions or laws. It is a right which constitutions and laws can neither give nor take. In its very nature, love is irrevocably independent of concocted laws. It exists. It comes and goes in spite of them all.
Isabel.
To any who challenge me, I believe promiscuity to be anarchy and the antithesis of all I hold dear.
You think you're so smart. You're not. You're stupid and selfish.
Utica?
Sister? Mama, what are you doing?
I'm under here with my own ears, the Baptist.
Yes, I am a free lover. I say that publicly and without shame. I have an inalienable constitutional right to love whom I may, to love for long or short a period as I can, to change that love every day if I please. Love is that which exists to do good, not merely to get good. The highest sexual unions are monogamous and perfect as long as they last. But when love departs, then let obligation depart. Anything else is a perversion. This I know in my soul.
The morning after that incendiary speech,
readers are treated to banner headlines, including Victoria and Theodore, Free Love for Me, Trumpets Victoria, and other variations on that theme. Popular artist Mr. Nast unveils the caricature of the year, Mrs. Woodhull garbed in deep black, with her curls coiled into horns atop her fine head. The title, Mrs. Satan.
Mrs. Satan.
You were never that, Mama.
I was nominated for...
I know.
The beginning of the end, Zulu.
I know.
Hush.
May 10th. 1872, the Equal Rights Party Convention, a beautiful spring evening at what may be the most heterogeneous gathering that has ever assembled in any city at any time. Fans of Mr. Marx mingle with proponents of abolition, and suffrage rears its twin heads, both homely and provocative.
We call for a complete overhaul of the U.S. government, including reform of the monetary system,
abolition of the death penalty,
welfare for the poor,
national public education,
and free love. What do we mean by that? Simply this. Nothing except marriage invests men with the right to debauch women sexually against their wills. Yet marriage is held to be synonymous with morality. Men should worship women rather than command or appropriate them. It is a pretension and a fraud to assume ownership or control over the person of a woman.
We call for sweeping changes in the present system because we believe such radical ideas as these. Women should be free to choose their partners, to marry or not, to divorce, and be able to keep their children, and to control their own bodies regarding when or even if to have children.
We now stand on the very brink of a social earthquake. What this earthquake may destroy, who may be swallowed up in its yawning chasm, or whether we ourselves may be swallowed up, we do not know. But great good will come to the human family at large. Of that, we are assured.
The convention concludes with this historic and shining moment. First, the nomination of Frederick Douglass for vice president. And then, the Equal Rights Party's nomination for president of the United States, Victoria C. Woodhull. Sadly, Mrs. Woodhull's shining moment was just that, a moment. 1 month later, Victoria Woodhull and family are turned out of their most recent rented abode. One much humbler than the fabled multi-parlored mansion vacated some months before. Meanwhile, the landlord of the Woodhull and Claflin brokerage triples their rent. In September, Victoria Woodhull is sued for her debts and declares,
I don't even own the clothes on my back.
What are we gonna do, Vicky?
Get help.
From a friend?
No. From an enemy.
Central Park. A chilly fall day. A genteel conversation.
I know you dislike me, Miss Beecher. The ranks of those who do are growing every day.
I, however, have always disliked you.
I hope that you will listen to me, however, for the sake of women everywhere.
American women are privileged, Mrs. Woodhull. They are not compelled to perform labor or conduct business outside the home.
I started working as a child, like many you refuse to acknowledge. Like the seamstresses who made the gown you are wearing. And you are well aware that there are over 3,000 prostitutes working every night in our city.
I know no such thing.
You certainly do. You cataloged them during your efforts to cleanse the moral character of New York.
That was a noble effort.
While neglecting to catalog their eminent clientele.
I am not one to judge your personal circumstances, Mrs. Woodhull.
I shall not be made a scapegoat.
I have great dreams for this country, and I am being offered to the press as a sacrifice.
Yes. Even the tedious suffragist no longer seem entirely besotted with you.
Thanks to the poison pens of you and your sister.
Well, one reaps the rewards of one's actions.
I will not be brought down by those who cover over the feculence of their lives with hypocritical mouthings, who divert public attention from their own iniquity by pointing the finger at me. I advocate free love in the purest sense.
I will not hear this.
My judges, people like your brother, preach against free love openly and practice it secretly.
Enough! To presume to describe American women, decent women, to suggest that men of good character and moral heritage would even consider...
Several distinguished editors, clergymen, authors, lawyers of this city. Vanderbilt, Jim Fisk, Luther Chalice, your reverend brother...
Hush!
...not only hold the same opinions on free love, but practice it. It is only a lack of moral courage that prevents their open avowal of such opinions. I am no longer willing to tolerate their silence while I am vilified. I will not tolerate it.
Victoria Woodhull, I shall strike you dead.
You couldn't. Even if you had the courage to try.
To love is our right, our basic human right. To err is our right, our basic human right. To be safe is our right, our basic human right. Oh, what a world.
Vic. The Life and Times of Victoria C. Woodhull, Future Presidentess, continues with the final episode 7, The Truth. Written by Maria Glanz, directed by Elizabeth Klobe, with sound design by James Bigby Garver. For a full list of participating artists and future broadcasts, please visit UMO Ensemble at www.umo.org. Thank you to the National Endowment for the Arts, For Culture, Norcliffe Foundation, Horizons Foundation, and generous private donors.